levantaré mi bandera, alzando mi país o estando allá afuera, porque para mí, mira, no existen fronteras. Yo levantaré mi bandera, oh.
Levantaré mi bandera, alzando en mi país o estando allá afuera, porque para mí, mira, no existen fronteras. No, no, oh. Y es que hay mucho sentimiento, lo grito al viento, de ser latino nunca me arrepiento.
Everyone, and welcome to a very special edition of the Latin Babbler Show. I am your host, the Latin Babbler. I am joined with the crew. Today, I got Ms. Rocky. I got Daisy Tornell, who from Cafecito con Daisy. We got Sylvia, a.k.a. Cosmo Latina, in the house. And our very special guest is a first-generation Latina who is currently a pharmacology and cancer biology PhD student from Duke University. She is bringing awareness to mental health through her social media platforms. Please welcome to the show, Elizabeth Mendez.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for inviting me. It's great to be here with you all.
She never really got an invite. She just kind of showed up and then just logged in to our platform. We have no idea where she came from. So, but yeah, it's actually...
It's like chat roulette.
Yeah, it was like chat roulette. We were just like, oh, we hit it, and she's the one that came on. So, but I'm really excited to have you here. I've been watching you like on LinkedIn and on Instagram, and you've been posting a lot of important stuff, a lot of vulnerability to kind of showcase some of the things that you're dealing with as a Latina in STEM. I'm going to go ahead and we're going to get right into it. So I had read your father was an immigrant that came to the United States. He came without a middle school education. Your mother was raised by a single parent with 10 children. That's phenomenal. And
wild.
He was one of the only people who actually received her high school diploma. And I've noticed that a lot of our guests are first generation Latina or Latinos. And a lot of them have mentioned how their parents' sacrifice like fueled their pursuit for the careers that they are going to. Growing up, did you feel that that was the same thing for you?
Absolutely, 100% agree. And every time I feel like I talk to somebody who's also either first gen, even college student, or they're children of immigrants, it's kind of the same, almost, I feel like a familial obligation to do my best with the opportunities that I've been given here, especially I think to my grandmother that's in Brazil right now, and she's actually not in very good health, but she's fantastic and, you know, had her kids and then all her kids managed, even though they were born with like literally not even shoes on their feet, managed to come to America in late 80s, early 90s by various means. And, you know, from Texas to Massachusetts, ended up meeting my mom and then having like me and all my siblings here. And just, it just amazes me how my like dad, who still to this day is not even a fluent English speaker and has like, you know, can't communicate really well with just people who only speak English. And the fact that he was able to come here, have four kids, get a wife, like, you know, granted, he had his problems here and there, but he did all that and like managed to just get me here. And I think about how hard my life is. I'm like, that's nothing to even be compared to working at 7 years old, like cleaning shoes and walking your sister to school, like that kind of stuff. So I just feel eternally grateful. And that alone has been like, okay, I don't even, not that I don't have a right to complain, but I just feel like I should do the best with what I have and be grateful for what I have.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Even though, of course, that gets hard.
Yeah, so I mean, you said you're, one of four?
Correct, yeah. Well, technically, okay, so I'm one of four with my biological mom and dad. And then my dad also has four other children in Brazil from a previous marriage. He got married, I think he was like 15 and his wife was like 13. This is back in like the 60s. And they had four kids. Well, five, but one passed away really, really young in infancy. But so they're all quite older than me and my four siblings here. I think the youngest is 29 now. So yeah, he has eight kids between two countries.
That's good. So when like during high school, were you like an AP student? Was that like your thing?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I don't know necessarily why I've always been this way, but like, I don't know. Like, I was excited to learn how to spell my full name. Like, my full name is like I thought it was cool because it had a lot of letters. It's like Elizabeth Yamarinda Mendez. Like, ooh, I'm going to learn how to spell it all before kindergarten. So that was like my goal, like tying my shoes and spelling my name. And I didn't go to preschool. So I was like, I'm going to have to step it up to keep up with these other kindergarteners who could afford preschool. And I was just, I don't know, always excited about school and learning. I remember being like hyped to get homework and like, I don't know, just do school projects and like learn my sister's math with her. She was a couple of years older than me. And I think that just was something I did well at and was just kind of a step away from everything else going on. And I continued to do well in middle school. Was like, okay, don't have much money or things like that. So I'm going to need to get a scholarship. Don't really know what college is, but I really want to go because like I see the people on National Geographic and I want to be like them, like talking about the cool thing they know everything about or like almost everything about. And so that just kind of always kept me going. And yeah, I had, I think, my middle school to high school schedule planned in like fifth grade. And I cried if it didn't work out. Like I was like, I have a binder of stuff from like stickers I collected in middle school because I wanted to put it in my Yale application. Like, I don't know where, like, I was just like, I don't, it was just always there, loved it. And I don't know, like, I'd get in trouble, like, Liz, get out of the kitchen. You gotta help with dishes. We're having dinner in here. Like, I'm studying.
Were you
out
the
there.
Volcano kid?
But, yeah, I actually did do an invention convention.
An invention convention.
But I didn't do a volcano. Yes. It was in fifth grade. I like BS'd it the night before and I was like, felt so bad because other kids had these cool inventions. But I made like this neat like little pencil organizer thing. So it was functional and like everyone liked it. So I was like, hey, my first presentation.
So I kid you not. When I was a kid for like the science fairs, because they used to have like a ton of science fairs for when you're like in middle school, I think it was somewhere between like fifth through seventh grade, I think is when they have the most of those. I actually created like a little neighborhood. And so I took like this cardboard and created like streets and houses and I got like trees from the outside. And then I took the, you know, the those little I took sticks and then the, I guess, the Christmas tree lights. And I would put them on the little stick and then I'd have them all wired across like that. And then at the very end, the giant, what is it? The D-cell batteries with like a little switch to be able to show the neighborhood
really
turning on and
that's
off.
That's impressive. You were a little engineer, a little electrical engineer.
Yeah, seriously.
I was a little nerd. I was a little nerd when I was a kid. So. But let's see. So now you're a pharmacology and cancer biology PhD student at Duke University School of Medicine. So we know where you're heading.
Yeah, somehow, yeah, some way. Yeah,
right?
Somehow, yeah. Some way.
Look, I'm going to go.
That sounded like a tongue twister.
I'm going to go right. I can barely say it. I'm going to go right into the statistics because I don't know that people are aware. Latinas make up 3% of the STEM workforce in the United States, despite being 8.1% of the population, only 3% of STEM workforce. The overall percentage of 24-year-olds in the U.S. with STEM degrees is 6%, but only 2.2% of that is from the Latino-Latina community. So, I mean, knowing that, what inspired you to go into, like, the STEM field?
Honestly, the original goal was not science. The original goal, I liked science, history, and languages, and music actually a lot. Like, I loved anything school in high school. Like, I wasn't doing it all. Like, the resume that long kid in high school. But it ended up making me really interested in a lot of different things. So I liked science and the humanities. And I was like, I don't want to just pick one. So why not both? So I started off as an archaeology major in undergrad. I really liked Egyptology and I wanted to go on digs. I wanted to do the whole shebang. Midway through my first semester, I was like, you know what? I like archaeology, but carbon dating is really cool. There's a lot of cool applications of chemistry and archaeology where you could get actual details about the stuff you're looking at that isn't as subjective as like basing it off history and what we know from like word of mouth and stuff like that. So I was like, I wanted to see how I could apply this to archaeology, and I found forensic anthropology. And what bones does is what a forensic anthropologist does. And so I was like, wow, this is really cool. And then eventually I just got pulled over to biology completely. And then I was just really scared and intimidated by science at first. I was like, I'm just an archaeology major. I cannot major in biology. And then I started taking those science classes and I was just kind of like really scared, especially like biology was my worst subject in high school. Like I took it freshman year. My teacher was mean. Like then it was I thought it was as smart in everything except DNA biology.
Wow.
And
look,
I don't know. It makes no sense. So I started with wildlife biology, like botany, zoology, thought that was all really cool. And I was like, okay, I'm in biology now. I'm doing the science thing. But there's no way I'm touching molecular biology. Like that is genetics. Like I'm going to avoid that class like the plague. Like no way. Like I can't do that. And then I ended up finally taking molecular biology classes my senior year of undergrad, and they're my favorite ones.
Ironic, right?
And then, ironic, yeah. And I was like, wow, maybe like I would have done better because I got C's in botany and zoology, and then like animal physiology and like the orgo, I got B's and A's. And I was like, wow, that makes no sense, but I shouldn't have doubted myself. So that started the path towards the molecular world. Throughout the undergrad adventure.
That's very cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I would say don't let the reason you avoid things be because you're scared of them. Because that's a lot of what holds me
back
is doubting myself. And then I find these other people who are like, you're incredibly smart and awesome. I'm like, wow, maybe I don't suck. Like
that's all right. Look, we did the same thing roughly about a year ago. So, I mean, this is the first time I've actually been doing, interviews and things of that nature, aside from just sitting at a desk doing computer work all this time. You know, when you go from programming to kind of like being more of an extrovert, it's kind of weird because, you know, you're opening your doors to something that's just like not normal to you. You know, what's normal to you is your gaming system and, you know, the programming code and this and that. And then you got to deal with people, and that's like completely different altogether. So very interesting, very interesting.
I was like, I feel like forcing myself into like the science communication world because I'm very awkward in person when it comes to talking to me in person. But if I know someone on the internet first and then I meet them, it takes that barrier away. So it can help me be not as introverted as I usually am because it's not as scary as real life.
Yeah, look, everybody who's listening, take that advice. You know, take a chance. Take a chance.
Are you a huge cunt?
Us too.
Wait, can we even say cunt?
Of course. It's empowering these days. Cunt, 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 cunt. I'm Ange Balasone, a.k.a. the drag queen, Fat Girl Gina.
And I'm Mike Fales, just a normal gay guy, I guess?
And we're the hosts of The Big Cunty Couch.
A gorgeous new talk show podcast where we invite queers and peers to sit bitch and be fierce on a huge-ass couch.
While we gab about all things gay.
So come get cozy.
And cunty.
With us. We're pan for platforms, so find us anywhere online and get listening, sweetie.
Or watching.
Or both.
Otherwise, why the hell am I in full drag?
And we'll see you on The Big Oh, wait. I thought we were going to say that together.
No. On the big cunty couch. Mwah.
And imposter syndrome is very serious. I feel like if you think you suck, like it's because imposter syndrome is taking over. Like, and then you hear it from somebody, like they say, you're amazing and you're good at what you do, and you kind of start believing it, but you need to believe it yourself.
Yeah.
So.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, I know I suck regardless. So no matter what you guys say, you know, we're just going to, Everybody's going to jump on me. Everybody's comment. Like, coño para. All right, so let's see. Let's talk about mental health, because one of the reasons, you know, I got inspired by you was one of the things that you had posted on LinkedIn. So I know that you have tried to bring this message to the forefront. We on the show have tried to bring this message to the forefront because we're trying to break the stigmas that we have in the Latino community about discussing mental health. Now, you have a post where you talk about how a year ago you had been officially diagnosed with ADHD. And in that post, you had also mentioned that you were also dealing with anxiety and depression. So while doing your job. And so I was wondering, like, how difficult was it for you, or how difficult for you is currently to be going for your PhD while dealing with these adversities that you're confronting?
Definitely very hard. And I think, you know, it varies person to person. I don't think there is a person that does not struggle or have some type of a mental health struggle in graduate school, and that is a whole problem in academia itself, which is, you know, a big reason why me and a lot of other people in SciComm are trying to talk about this, because there is no reason 100% of PhD students should all be depressed and anxious in, you know, this way. Even if you're with a nice PI or a boss or at a great school, it still happens just because of the systemic pressure in academia, I think. But for me personally, this past year has been really hard. But honestly, I would say that since starting my PhD, things have been easier for me. I have better access to medical care because I have funding and insurance. I get paid a stipend. And so, like, I actually am able to see, I see a psychologist once a week that I've been seeing since I started back in 2020. And it's having a regular psychologist has been like life changing. And then I also see my psychiatrist usually once a month, depending on like what I'm shifting with meds. And I'm a big person. Like, if you need meds, take them. No shame in that. Like, I just upped my dose of Prozac today because I have been struggling the past couple of months. And it's just so relieving that I could be in a workplace where I could talk about that stuff, like with my boss and stuff, and not feel like shame or embarrassment towards it. Whereas in high school is when my mental health problems first kind of came to a head. I struggled with really bad eating disorder, anorexia, bulimia, body dysmorphia is still kind of a thing. That's when my depressive episodes first started, around like 15, 16. And that was like really, really difficult. And I just kind of had to shut down for a bit, just like as a young teenager. And, you know, being from a family with a single mom, like my mom is supportive, she's strong, but there's the pressure to be happy with what you have. And I felt a lot of guilt about being depressed in general, because what shouldn't I be grateful for? What don't I have? Why am I depressed? And so a lot of me even accepting that, like, this is a chronic problem I'm probably gonna have to deal with for the rest of my life, is just being like, there's nothing to be embarrassed or ashamed of. And so it's been actually a journey with me and my family, all relative, from even, you know, my more Caucasian side and my Brazilian side. It's just kind of like, it's okay to need to go to therapy. Whereas, you know, my parents would be like, oh, that's wrong. You're crazy, or this and that, or, you know, you should go to church instead, or, you know, talk to God, love your family. And it's to rely on medicine and therapy, and not like your family circle and religion, I feel like was a hard thing to get past for me. And now it's still a struggle, but not as hard.
I think for a lot of first generation students, I mean, I know undergrad and my master's programs were where I was able to get healthcare away from my parents, where I was finally an adult and I could seek the help that I needed. And I didn't have to necessarily go with my family, but could deal with the issues that I had, sometimes about my family, sometimes just about what I was dealing with. And if I hadn't have had access to that, I don't know where my life would have gone. So it's great that you bring up all the resources that are available to you as a PhD student.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, and for people applying to programs, definitely make sure your program's giving you health insurance, because they should be, especially in the sciences. You should be fully funded with health insurance.
Oh, see, that advice we didn't know. Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different corporations out there that also have that mental health like subsidiary. And that's you know, the type of therapist, psychology, and things like that that can help. Wish I had that as a kid, but.
Yeah, no, Rocky, I agree. I mean, so many people don't even take advantage of their benefits at work. And now after the pandemic, so many companies are upping their well-being. So, yeah, people should take advantage of it.
Now, Elizabeth, I you said that as a teenager is when you started seeing, you know, what's going on, like the depression and things like that. I remember as a kid in elementary school, that's when I started, you know, realizing, I can't finish something, or I just, you know, I couldn't stay focused, and it was just hard for me to retain information. Do you remember back then, like being in elementary, you know, that young, that you couldn't focus or you needed help with something? Because I mean, you're very smart. Like, I wish I had like 10% of your brain, and I could always, you know, I had good grades and all, but I just couldn't focus. And then later on in life, as an adult, once I had my children, it was like, okay, I need to figure this out because this has been going on for such a long time. So tell me about like your, that part of, you know, growing up as, you know, in the your childhood. Sorry, I'm a little tongue twisted today.
So that's a really good question, actually. And it's something that I've talked a lot about with my providers, because I was always like, how am I so good at school? And like, do I care about these things? Like very, I don't know, like I'm a very much like type A and an overachiever and like that kind of thing. Like an A isn't enough. I want better. But I think that actually the perfectionism and obsessing over school and obsessing over what I ate was like the first way my mental health issues actually manifested, because I don't remember like thinking about anything besides school as like a young kid outside of like, you know, stuff my parents were dealing with the divorce and stuff like that. So I think just putting all my mental effort into that maybe helped block out like being distracted or struggling or like aware of what's going on. Because now, and you know, once I got married and like on my own in an apartment, and now my mom is sick with cancer, and like life is even more turbulent than as a child, I think that's when I started to struggle with actually focusing, paying attention to what I was doing, because I think I have more of a problem now prioritizing my time and seeing like thinking about what's important to me. And that gives me anxiety and a lot of guilt. Whereas as a kid, it was just like school, survive, school, survive, school, survive. So that kind of just like shifted. And I think that's how I ended up, you know, running into more problems with my ADHD as an adult. But I know it's different person to person, and especially with girls and boys, because my brother was diagnosed with ADHD really, really young, but he was very inattentive. So it came out in school with behavior and stuff like that. But I was just kind of always quiet and in my head.
Me too. I was the same. Always in my head. My youngest son as well, he's diagnosed with ADHD. So I related. I just wasn't the one jumping off the sofa like he was.
Yeah.
He was up and down.
Biting the siblings.
Exactly. Biting the siblings, couldn't stay still. It's like, what's going on? But then it was like me, like you said, very quiet in my head. Like, you know, I'm like on a, doing a test. And it was like my mind would just go somewhere else and then I'll start doing something else. And that's the way I've always been. Even, you know, when it comes to housework, it's like, okay, let me start this. But let me see that I don't finish. And that's when I said, as an adult, I'm like, no, I know I have something. So let's figure this out. So,
yeah, it took me forever. Like none of my doctors, or at least I think I went through several psychiatrists that even wanted to discuss an ADHD diagnosis. And it wasn't until I started reading more and kind of, I guess, learning about medicine myself from like the research I'm doing that I'm like, maybe it's not just depression, because I've been on I don't know how many antidepressants and none of them quite do the job. And the second I started taking Ritalin, even at a low dose, like I cannot, it was almost like overwhelming how helpful it was. And yeah, that's when I really realized that there's probably a lot more people like really struggling and not getting the medication and help they need, because like I went under the radar, you know. Ritalin is a stimulant medication. So Ritalin and Adderall are stimulant medications. And so it's basically just changing the amounts of neurotransmitters in your brain, and so that you have a proper balance. Because like with depression, you may not have serotonin or dopamine, or like, you know, there's different types of neurotransmitters. So it's just replacing one of those. And depending on like the type of ADHD you have or your family history, you may be better on Ritalin versus Adderall, or Adderall versus Ritalin, because they're biologically a little different.
Yeah, I find it's also important for us to, as someone who doesn't have ADHD but has a lot of friends who do, I have had to not personalize how distracted they are, or I feel like I'm not being paid attention to. So I find having a conversation is really difficult. And it's just taken a really long time to honor their process and understand what they're going through. And that if they're multitasking, it's not because they're ignoring me or don't want me around. Just that that's what it takes for them to cope with what they're going through. And so I think it's really important to bring up these issues, particularly in our community, so that we better understand other people and what they're going through.
So Elizabeth, how challenging was it to come to the realization that something was different? Because many times as Latinas and women in general, we hold back what we are feeling as to not be a burden to others, and we simply internalize what we are feeling.
Honestly, I'll go a little deep here, which I don't think I've actually talked or posted about this. But this is an exclusive, and I've debated a lot of whether or not I wanted to talk about it, but I do think it's important. So when my first, rock bottom moment, I guess I would say, I was 16 years old. It was 2012. I was a waitress at the time. My anorexia was horrible. I'd lost like 60 pounds in a couple months. I was like horrible to be around. Nobody in my family knew what to say. You know, my mom knew something was wrong, but if anybody dared to speak to me about food or what I was eating or how I was exercising, like, it was not even a conversation that was going to happen. Like, just completely like took over my whole life. And then I got to the point, I was in color guard, and so I was only eating like, I think, 300 calories a day. It was really, really bad for a long time, and over-exercising. And so during band camp, it's like 12-hour days outside. And it was the first day I had like eaten over 1,000 calories. And I was like, felt horrible about myself, like wanted to actually like not be alive anymore. And I had gone to work at like the restaurant that I work at later. I was a hostess at the time. And I was remember sitting on like my little phone, and I was texting, and I was just kind of like, I really don't want to like exist anymore. I can't do this anymore. And I had a total breakdown just like during my shift. And I had my mom actually pick me up and bring me to the emergency room. And I voluntarily admitted myself to the like adolescent psychiatric ward, because I really was like just kind of hit a wall and was like, I'm not okay. And I had kept telling myself I was okay. I don't have an eating disorder. I'm not sick. I'm not anorexic. Like, I'm not depressed. Like, I'm not being like a brat to my family. I'm not being a horrible person. Like, none of this is true. And I just, yeah, it was just my,
it's
like
masking it.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And so that was just kind of the first time I was like, okay, there's something wrong here. And, yeah. And it even directly after that, I wasn't like, oh yeah, like I love therapy and like take my antidepressants. Like, I had another time when I had to come home my freshman year from college, and same kind of thing over the summer home, ran into issues, and I had really bad suicidal ideation and suicidal thoughts, and put myself in the same place that I was before for a few days and just reevaluated everything. And that time is kind of when I was finally like, okay, I need to take these clues of when my eating gets out of control or when my depression gets out of control more seriously, because the consequences are clearly not okay to me or anyone around me.
No, thank you for sharing that.
So what advice would you give to someone that feels like they're struggling with that, or or doesn't know how to speak up about it, maybe thinks they have anxiety, depression, ADHD, like, what do you think is the first step into, like, getting the help you need?
I think it's pretty terrifying for anyone, even now still, like, this past January when I was, like, feeling really crappy, I was like, I'm scared to even say I'm struggling right now because, like, I feel obligated to feel good all the time because I have all this experience with da-da-da-da-da. But it's like, no, like, that takes away the meaning of everything if I can't say when I'm having a hard time. So, I guess I don't, I got distracted.
No, and look, and you're on the show and you're pouring your heart out. And that is completely, completely admirable because I know it takes courage to do this, especially in a setting where we know that this is eventually going to air and, you know, other people are going to learn and learn your story. And I'm just really, really happy that you're able to at least to provide that advice and that counsel for a lot of people who may be dealing with this issue, who for the most part are going through the same things that you went or the same thing that Miss Rocky went. Because I personally have dealt with the, you know, the issue of being a parent who, you know, goes through those type of things. And so I can completely empathize with you with everything that you're saying. Especially, look, there are people out there who are the complete opposite of the discussion that we're having, which is that they are dealing with somebody in their family who is going through these things. And the most important part of this conversation that we're having is that they understand what the person's going through so that they don't take the approach of, oh, this person's just being lazy, like Ms. Rocky was saying, or that this person's being crazy, or that, oh, you're just being super dramatic, or, hey, you know, like, look, we're in the Latino community. People do not like to talk about therapy and seeking help. Like you were saying, most of it are just saying, hey, go to this church and go do this and go do that. And so I think that this conversation is mad interesting because and mad necessary because for me, it'll give a glimpse to the life of someone and be able to provide insight as to, okay, maybe you need to have a better understanding of what's going on through somebody. And that way you're able to handle this situation better as opposed to just writing them off. Because that's what a lot of people do in our community is they just write them off. You get a label stuck on you. And then for that matter, you know, you're pretty much done in people's eyes. So look, and you're like a prime example of somebody who's sitting here, you know, struggling with these issues. But at the same time, you're able to use the counsel and the advice that you're getting from your therapist and so forth to be able to continue what you're trying to achieve, which is like really amazing. Absolutely amazing.
And Daisy, I did remember your question. There you now. Go. See how that happens. But I would tell people, so if you are debating reaching out to somebody and you're scared to be embarrassed to reach out to get help, and your anxiety about even asking somebody is so bad to the point where you're like, oh my God, what if something happens and nobody ends up knowing, then you need to just do it. Like, that's kind of to the point I got to where I was like, and I almost was right there January until I kind of like reeled it in and like, you know, was able to get through what the hard, more difficult time I was having. But like, if you're really sitting there thinking that there is no point to be living and that there is no purpose or anything like that, then, and it is that bad, and there is not a single person in the world who should look at you and say anything horrible about you going right to a hospital and getting help. Like, and if they say anything other than that, then they should not, they're not a good person and they shouldn't be in your life. Because I was like, realistically, if I was feeling in a dark place, I was like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? And I'm like, no, I should talk to the people around me, or I need to go get help right now. And so I ended up talking to the people around me. But if I was too scared to talk to people around me and I needed to just go get help, that is what I would have done, because there is not a single person I can think of that I work with that would be like, wow, Elizabeth is such a slacker because she just went inpatient. Like, what? It makes no sense. So if you're feeling like that dark are in that hard of a place, like, especially for folks, I feel like, who've never been to therapy, sometimes, like, for me, it used to get that bad a lot more than, like, as opposed to now, where I'm having, like, conversations about feeling shitty, because you need to talk about, or at least I feel like I need to talk about my feelings.
Absolutely.
Completely agree. Yeah.
I wholeheartedly believe in a mental health / wellness team. Can you speak to who you consider to be part of your team?
Yes. Definitely my mama. But for the things that mom stresses me out about, definitely my therapist. I have one of my very good friends, Bree, who I've been friends with since college. She's just like kind of like my soul sister. So I could talk to her about anything, whether it's the most ridiculous thing I could, even if I was like, Brie, I want to run away, drop out of school and like move to a different country. She'd be like, all right, let's, what? Like, but I'd be able to talk to her about it. So I think having someone around like that's really good, as well as like an actual professional, someone who can give you, who can help you get access to medications, like my psychiatrist, my PI, my research mentor, her name's Corinne Lenardic. She's a pediatric oncologist. She's a wonderful, wonderful lady. She has been like my main cheerleader throughout like my PhD. And if I wasn't in the group that I was in right now, and if I was in maybe a situation where I had a toxic boss or something, I would probably not even be like having this conversation, because I'd be struggling so much. So very, very grateful for like my coworkers. And my family and my mental health team and my besties.
The besties.
Awesome. Yes. Gotta have that support system. It's important.
I agree. Yeah. It's good to have friends that actually like understand the situation and are able to support you.
Yes.
In a
yes.
healthy way.
Uh-oh.
Okay. Not, you know, not in a Demi Lovato friend's way. In a healthy way.
Oh, it breaks my heart. I used to love her so much.
Hey, I'm just saying, look, she surrounds herself with people who clearly do not understand the boundaries and giving her the boundaries that she needs. Sometimes you got to show tough love. And I don't think, you know, so I'm just saying, look, she's a great mental health advocate, but, you know, her friends need to do better. They just need to do better. Just saying.
One bad friend can derail you. It really can. Especially like, yeah. Like, I get very involved with my friendships and, like, relationships I have with people. Like, not just my husband. Like, I care about my friends and my family. And, like, I want to be involved in their lives if they're really, like, that type of a friend to me. And so if someone gets into that mix that's just not a good person or ends up being toxic, like, it'll consume everything. Like, boundaries. I struggle with boundaries. I think a lot of people from Latina families struggle with boundaries, because we're always wanting to talk about, tell your family everything.
Yeah, I learned that 14 years ago. I set boundaries. You know, anybody who wants to enter my fort's got to go through some major borders. Like, there's, you know, Emigra. There's, you know, they got to turn around and go through customs. Airport security is like 15 lines they got to go through. Like, no, it's
renew your passport.
It's just something
every
I learned
year.
A long time. Yeah, right. They got to renew their membership to the Babbler Times. Like, it's just one of those things they got to go through a lot. They do.
You've dropped so many gems here for people who are suffering from loads of mental health stuff, but there's also people in our community who want to study STEM. They don't know where to start. For those that are watching and are interested in pursuing this field, what do you tell them? Where can they start? What should they do?
First step, if you have any type of interest, I would say is to listen to Star Talk Radio with Neil deGrasse Tyson. It's a science podcast that I feel like can get anyone excited about science. Like, and he explains things in a way, like, science is supposed to be understandable. And so find people that communicate science in a way that's like not too convoluted. Like, so, like, find people who are interested in mentoring you and really like getting excited about teaching you, because the first getting into science is the best part. That's when you have you don't really have bias from learning things in the field. You could ask questions from like anywhere. You could ask questions that maybe somebody asked 50 years ago and ended up being like a Nobel Prize. And like, you get to feel all of that as you're learning about science. So I'd say really lean into the excitement of new knowledge and explore like forms of media and information that excite you about science, and just go with what makes you the most hyped. Like, if you don't like chemistry, don't try to be a chemistry major. Like, if you struggle with chemistry, you can be a chemistry major. But if you hate chemistry, no point. Yeah, ability, don't, it's about passion, not ability. I think anyone could actually be successful in science if they had a good mentor.
Yeah, completely agree. Man, this was awesome. I loved it. I mean, the whole discussion from beginning to end, representation in STEM, mental health awareness. Look, we've been trying to do a mental health awareness conversation for quite some time. We had one probably a few months ago. This was the first time that we kind of dabbed into it again. And you were kind of like the perfect messenger for that. It's like, it's really, really awesome to even hear your story. And I hope that, you know, Latinos and Latinas who are listening to this and families in general are able to kind of like resonate with, you know, what you personally went through and what some of the people here personally went through. And, you know, be able to find and seek the help that they're looking for. And for those who are trying to go into STEM, now you know, go into something that's actually passionate. Yeah. And by the way, talking about hit you up, where do they go to do that?
Yeah. So on LinkedIn, you could search Elizabeth Mendez and I should pop up. But my LinkedIn profile, the URL is / Elizabeth the Scientist. On Instagram and TikTok, it's Elizabeth the Scientist. And on Twitter, it is Elizabeth M_MS, because you don't have enough characters on Twitter to do Elizabeth the Scientist.
Yeah. We had to take the O off of show for Latin Babbler Show. So it's Latin Babbler.
Yeah, I was like,
we can't even say Latin Babbler Show. It's
I tried like Twitter. Get with the program. Like, no, nothing worked. I got the Elizabeth the Scientist on everything else, just not Twitter.
We're able to go, hey, follow the Latin Babbler Show.
Character limitations. Show.
We can't do it for Twitter. So it's like, and on Twitter, we're on Latin Babbler W. Because we can't do the O. Almost sounds like we're about to cuss.
No, I'm Cafecito con D on Twitter as well.
I'm surprised I could fit mine. Mine was the Latin Babbler. I was like, oh my goodness, thank goodness. Because I don't want to have it with a Latin blubber or something like that. We'll have to like change the whole thing in order to make it work.
The Blubber Show.
But... yeah, the Latin Blubber Show. You'd be surprised how many people mess that up. Oh, yeah, Mr. Blubber. And I'm like, okay, thanks. I mean, I understand I'm big. That's why we have the, you know, I Choose to Be Healthy series. But doesn't mean that that's the name of the show. But look, Elizabeth, it was absolutely amazing to have you here. Fun, witty, like extremely knowledgeable, and actually an inspiration. I'm gonna say that.
Oh, thank you very much.
Because I'm hoping that, anybody who's watching this, anything that you're trying to look for as far as to how to achieve, she's a prime example right there. Prime example right there.
You don't got to be perfect because I'm not.
That's true. Right there. What she just said, you don't got to be perfect. You don't have to be. But that's our show, folks. You can listen to us on Radio89.com on Saturdays, 5 p.m. and literally on every popular podcast. Follow us on social media platforms at Latin Babbler Show, except for Twitter, which is at Latin Babbler Show. And visit our website at www.latinbabbler.com. I'm the Latin Babbler, along with Daisy, along with Raquel Cosmo Latina, and our special guest, Elizabeth Mendez. We are out.
Desde Nicaragua hasta Costa Rica, con esta canción todo mundo se identifica. Llamen a los chilenos y a los cubanos, llamen a Puerto Rico y a los mexicanos, que ya se armó la rumba. Desde Panamá hasta Ecuador, vámonos a Perú y luego hasta El Salvador. Que se escuche Brasil y Argentina. Yo quiero un grito de mi gente latina y levantaré mi bandera, estando en mi país o estando allá afuera, porque para mí mira, no existen fronteras. Yo levantaré mi bandera.